By the year 1982, C. Daniel Bowling was a park ranger in Mesa Verde and in the Balcony House. There's a photograph of him that adorns one of the pages of this album, These Houses, from 82. And on the other side, the verso of that is Dan Bowling at the age of maybe 8 or 9. 10 years earlier, as a tourist visiting that same place. We're going to go from the canyons, from Mesa Verde, into our own Studio C for a conversation with C. Daniel Bowling. But first, he gave us some live music.
Here's one off the brand new CD that's just coming out. This is Mama's Radio, and it's not about me and my mama. It's about a dear friend and a great songwriter based over in Nashville, Lee Doman. He told me a little bit about his family story, and I wrote this song for him and his mama, Leona. Daddy was a dirt poor farmer, preaching to the Kansas corn. Mama'd been a high school charmer, 32 when I was born. Grew up counting every penny, who'd feel any richer though? Listening to my favorite show on my mama's radio. I turned 14 in 63. On my birthday, mama said, "There's no money for a present. I wrote you a poem instead. Mailed it to a competition. We might win. You never know." So we tuned in KCMO on my mama's radio. Life at home was rarely pretty, hand to heart, I have to say. But sometimes heaven spares some pity, me and mama won that day. Mama's eyes filled up with tears, she hugged me like she'd seldom done. Laughing, crying, all together, always know I love you, son. That's one birthday I remember, even now I'm getting old. Faith and fate combined with hope and my own transistor radio. Looking back, I know she loved me, even times it didn't show. I keep her picture and that poem right here on my radio, on my mama's radio. Sleeves rolled up, work gloves on, a dust mask on my face. Time to sort and pack and load and ship my papa's place. Chunks of chain, hunks of board, a couple dozen scriptures of the Lord. Things we can't, things we must, under 40 years of dust. chest waders with the feet cut off, hanging on the wall of my dad's garage. I don't know what he kept them for, but I'm pretty sure he never wore those chest waders with the feet cut off, unless maybe he lost his mind. But when somebody goes through things of mine, no telling just what they'll find. That throne-shaped toilet paper holder really reeks of class. A Victorian-era serving tray with dead moths under glass. What to keep, what to throw, who the heck is ever gonna know? What we pitch, what we save, take that secret to my grave. But Grandpa wired with these pliers, I'll keep them for sure. And this pistol, Mama's daddy carried in the war. But what to do with all this stuff? Every house already has enough. Give a bunch of things away, pity our own kids someday. There's chest waders with the feet cut off, hanging on the wall of my dad's garage. I don't know what he kept them for, but I'm pretty sure he never wore those chest waders with the feet cut off, unless maybe he lost his mind. But when somebody goes through things of mine, no telling just what they'll find. 'Cause I've got pay stubs clear back to the 60s, blue jeans that no longer fit me, bags of rusty used guitar strings, projects left undone, fallout from a jack of all trades, junk that hasn't budged in decades. In my mind the choir sings, you are your father's son.
Well, what you're referring to in the album there is the centerfold of the lyric booklet, and there are two photographs separated by 10 years. They're both in Balcony House ruin at Mesa Verde National Park, and in the first one, I'm an early teenage boy on a family vacation listening to the Ranger and learning all about Mesa Verde and being fascinated. And in the second one, 10 years later, I'm the Ranger talking to another group of tourists on vacation. I got to work for the National Park Service for about 10 years, including Mesa Verde and Chaco Canyon. And then I went over to the U.S. Bureau of Land Management, where I spent another 20-plus years. Music has always been part of my life, and I knew that as soon as I could finish a government career and get the kids raised up, that I would start doing music full-time. And so I started doing more and more music towards the end of my government career. I put out 3 albums while I was still working as a federal agent, and I've put out now 4 since then. I left the government the end of January 2008, and now I tour all of the U.S. and Western Europe full-time, 9, 10, 11 months a year. I'm out making music somewhere.
Now, that's an incredibly ballsy thing to do, and it sounds like, as you said, one of the advantages you have going in is that the family is raised, the mortgage is paid off.
Exactly.
Maybe even you and your wife can travel together.
We do as much as possible. Yes, it makes a world of difference. So many of my counterparts who still have to pay the mortgage and the health insurance and so forth solely from their music income, they have to work a great deal harder than I do, and they have to sometimes take gigs that they might not want for the gig itself, but they have to have for the money. I like being in a position of being choosy about when I play. I like to play for people who really came there about the music and the stories, and you know, they want to fully engage with the stories that I'm using music to tell.
Well, you have been doing this through many different changes in how musicians make their living, how they distribute their work, but also the kind of venues that are open, especially to singer-songwriters. Now, I know Albuquerque has had its complaints about the lack of a venue that really gives a storyteller like yourself the kind of audience that he or she really needs to sort of hone in on the details. And we're hearing your ear for detail in some of these songs right now.
Thank you.
But you've managed to create a circuit, or do you have to recreate the circuit every time you go on tour?
Well, since I'm just in the first, the eighth or ninth year of doing it full-time, I am still developing my circuit. That's one of the big trade-offs for the career that I had before this, was I don't have nearly as much of a network as some of my counterparts who spent those three decades traveling the country and meeting folks and playing their music. So I'm making up for lost time in that regard. But over just this last, say, 6 years, I really feel like I've made a tremendous amount of progress in building that network, getting to know more of the good places to play, and getting my toe in the door at those places. There's a big difference between knowing a venue exists and being able to get on that venue's radar. One of the things that really made a difference for me, the Kerrville Folk Festival in the Hill Country of Texas. It's been going for 40, I think this will be its 45th year. And for about 40 of those years, they have had a songwriter competition called New Folk. And I started paying attention to New Folk decades ago. And then within the last decade plus, started sending my songs to New Folk, hoping that someday I would be able to follow in the footsteps of people like Lyle Lovett and I'm not going to be able to think of the names right now, but lots of very well-known folk and acoustic songwriters who really came to the public's attention through being in New Folk.
There's almost a direct connection between that first album and a Kerrville victory or a Kerrville award.
There can be.
We see that all the time.
And in 2014, I finally actually did get into the finals of New Folk and was one of that year's six winners. So that has made a tremendous difference in what venues are at least interested in hearing my music and seeing if I'd be a good fit for their audience.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot fewer of my inquiries go directly into the round file than used to. And so that's been a huge boon, as well as just really increasing my self-confidence about my songwriting by getting that reassurance from the songwriting community that what I'm doing is valid.
Now, you are in these songs, and in if we go back to the Dreams album.
Yeah, He Dreams. That's 2009. Yeah.
You know, you are a very you're a short story writer in song in a lot of ways.
I like to think so. My wife says, stop calling yourself folk singer or songwriter, call yourself balladeer. Balladeer songwriter is now what I say, because they are original songs, but they are story songs with a folk influence. And that's what ballads are, is story songs.
How far back does that strategy go? I mean, is this what made you pick up the guitar, or were you playing a different kind of music and then made a turn towards these stories?
When I very first started playing guitar, I was playing traditional folk songs because that's what I heard around the house. My mother was an amateur folk singer. She actually had her own television show on Armed Forces Television in Japan in the early 60s playing folk songs. And so that's what I was raised with. And when I found her a disused guitar in the attic. She had gone on to auto harp and quit taking lessons on the guitar after we moved back from Japan. She didn't have a teacher anymore. When I found her guitar in the attic and suggested that maybe that would be something I would like to use, she was teaching high school, and I was in the sixth grade, and she knew that one of her freshman students played guitar. So she paid him $5 to stay after class one day, and I came over from the junior high next door with my little classical guitar, and he showed me chords to Fire and Rain, James Taylor's song. Very simple chords to Fire and Rain, and that was my one and only official guitar lesson. And that also sort of ushered in my paying attention to people like James Taylor and Cat Stevens and Don McLean and some of those people. Harry Chapin really captured my imagination because he was a storyteller in song, as you're suggesting that I am, and I appreciate that you see the stories in there. But that's what the old folk singers did too, people like Tom Paxton and Pete Seeger. There were stories in those songs, and that's what always attracted me the most.
Where do you get those stories now? I mean, there's one song that we're going to hear. Actually, we're going to hear it right now.
Okay.
And this is a song that came out of your work with returning veterans.
Yes, yes. There are actually two songs on the new album that come from that experience. One is called I Brought the War With Me. My mind is a worn-out hotel, but every room's full every night of the year. I really wish I could invite you all in, but there's no space for any more here. Everything I lived through in Iraq, inside and outside of the wire, lives in my head, wells up in my heart, gnawing, unquenchable fire. Most of the time, I can hold it at bay, make folks who don't know me believe I'm okay. I never faced battle completely alone, till I brought the war with me when I came back home. Innocent trash on the roadside for you is a reason to panic for me. Some loser got lazy, you figure. I figure it looks like a damn IED. Must have used up all that courage I had over there fighting the war. Back home now, lying in my own bed. Can't walk out my own front door. But most of the time, I can hold it at bay, make folks who don't know me believe I'm okay. I never faced battle completely alone, till I brought the war with me when I came back home. I honor my brothers and sisters who fight. We rally to each other's need. But there is no honor among politicians who think every wound has to bleed.
faced battle completely alone, till I brought the war with me. When I came back home.
The hope of getting us together, the songwriters and these veterans, was that telling their stories might be helpful to the veterans, but more importantly, telling their stories to songwriters who then might be able to tell those stories again through their musical art get a broader understanding for a larger pool of listeners to have an idea of what's going on with some of these veterans and what they're having to deal with. So that's where both of those songs generated.
Have some of the vets whose stories contributed to the songs, because I'm sure it's not a one-to-one correspondence, but
right.
Have some of them had a chance to hear what you've done with their stories?
Yes, they have, and the feedback was very positive, that they were so glad that what they were trying to explain had come through, and that now in the form of a song, they felt it was much more accessible to listeners, and maybe more folks would understand what they were dealing with, which of course was the whole purpose in the first place.
I am not hearing traditional set folk chords in what you're doing. I'm not hearing voicings that are entirely expected of a quote-unquote folk singer. Is that something that has been just coming naturally to you, or is that something? I know because there are some musicians in this area who work in a fairly traditional fashion, and
right.
They have a rule that if you have three chords in a row that are from the bluegrass canon, you cannot play chord number four. You've got to find something else to go with. How are you discovering sort of this, the uniqueness, a sound that is different?
Sure. Well, for one thing, I am a completely by ear musician. I'm not paper trained. I don't read music.
Paper trained.
I listen and absorb and then bring it back out as my own in whatever fashion I can. As far as trying to avoid the three chord rut, Steve Gillette is a wonderful songwriter that I have the privilege of getting to spend time with down at the Kerrville Folk Festival every year. Probably his best known song over the years was Darcy Farrow, that many people recorded, starting with Ian and Sylvia and then John Denver. And that song sort of made Steve's mark, but he's a tremendous songwriter. And one of the things Steve says is the melody is extremely important in carrying the story that you want to tell. And if you write all your songs with your instrument of choice in your hands, you will continually go where you are comfortable on your instrument of choice. And the best way to free your melodies is to write them without your instrument. Do it when you're walking, do it when you're running, do it when you're driving. Then, once you have written a beautiful melody, come back to your instrument and learn how to play it. And so I take that to heart, and that expands what I do on the guitar because I keep trying to learn how to play my own songs.
So can I imagine that a lot of your music has been composed while behind the wheel?
Oh, very much so. less now that most of my driving has Ellen sitting beside me, because I think songwriting is much like sausage making and legislation. It is not a spectator sport. It's very messy. It's also very exposed. I don't like to work on my writing with an audience. I really like to do that very privately. And then when I'm more comfortable about how it's working, share it with other people. So I used to write behind the wheel a lot when I was driving for dollars for the government alone. Now with an audience in the car, in the van, as it actually is, it's a lot tougher to do a lot of riding on the road, but I still do some. Ellen has learned to tell when there's a certain glazed look in my eye that perhaps I'm riding in my head and it's not a great time to launch into a conversation. So I still do some riding behind the wheel.
Like lead belly would eat and pee.
All right, that is C. Daniel Bowling. You can find him online. You can find him on Facebook. Daniel, without the C, bowling.com is one place where you can link up.